grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Okay, please respect our speaker and silence your cell phones now. And our speaker is being recorded with her permission, and CDs can be purchased from Darren. He was here a minute ago. And I'd like to introduce tonight's speaker, which is Mary from Aliso Viejo. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Mary O. from Aliso Viejo, and I'm an alcoholic. And I would like to thank Mike for inviting me to come speak here. I also want to welcome the newcomers, and I hope that you keep coming back to this meeting in particular. I used to attend this meeting several years ago, and I see some familiar faces, so that's always nice when you come to speak at meetings that you see familiar faces that still continue to come to the same meetings. And I got an opportunity to speak here about a year ago, so if you are here and you heard me the last time, probably not much has changed. My story is still the same, but maybe you can keep me honest. I also want to congratulate the birthday people, and I thoroughly enjoyed all the birthday shares, and they stole several of my lines that I'm going to be sharing with you tonight. I definitely see this as a WE program, so I have a sobriety date. It's November 9th, 1989. So I've been sober for 23 years. I'll be celebrating a day at a time if I make it on November 9th, 24 years of this year. So I am very, very grateful for the sobriety date that I have. And kind of like Mark was sharing that for sure I don't work a perfect program, but the things that I do today, based on what I did early on, have kept me here. So I'm really, really grateful. And I loved how the birthday share was, real simple. It was really, really bad for me out there, and I'll go into that a little bit because I do have a little time. And the life that I have today as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous is just amazing. It's still amazing to me. So I kind of grew up in the area in Mission Viejo, and one of my first memories was when I was about 5 years old, and I was swinging on a swing in our preschool, and I was all alone, and I looked up in the sky, and I just felt completely alone, like I was an alien that got dropped here. And I don't know where that feeling came from, but it was one of my first memories, and I definitely felt that way throughout my life until I started drinking at age 13. And this is just my experience, strength, and hope. So this is my story. That's how I share it. And I was adopted, and I don't think that that made me an alcoholic. I definitely think that early on, when I did start drinking, it was definitely my answer to all my woes and problems, and all the way that I felt different from everybody else. And but I definitely drank alcoholically the minute I started drinking. I drank to get drunk. I drank for the effect, and I drank hard and fast, and I drank a lot faster than all my friends, and they would ask me why I'm drinking so quickly, and they would always have to take care of me, unfortunately. But so I drank from 13 till 16, when the first day I got my license down here in San Clemente was the day that I got pulled over for drunk driving. And back then, they would go ahead and hand you a little piece of paper when you got your license. And I was down here at my sister, who's 3 years older than I am. Her boyfriend was having a party down in San Clemente. And back then, I wasn't drinking any beer. I was drinking just hard liquor. They had a keg in the back. They had a bottle of Jose Cuervo, my best friend, and Jack Daniels. And they didn't have any mixer. So being 16, I mixed those together in the beer tumbler glass, you know, or whatever. Needless to say, the cops came, I don't even know when it was, and, you know, now that I was all of 16 and had my license, I said, I'm going to get out of here, you know, and they were just waiting for people to leave the party, of course, and they followed me, and I didn't realize they were right behind me, and, you know, this is my first experience driving, you know, that day, and so I went through a stop sign, and I sobered up very quickly, so I thought, and the cop was right behind me, turned on the lights, and he, you know, pulled me over and says, can I see your license? He says, I have my license, you know, big shot-ish, and pulled out this little piece of paper, and he says, step out of the car, and gave me a field sobriety, and I didn't pass that, and so I went to plan B, and, you know, started getting all cute on him, and that didn't work either, and so he put me in the back of the cop car, and I was with a friend of mine who was crying, you know, and he's like, what are you crying for? And she's like, I don't drive a stick shift, you know. And it was a Chevy Chevette, you know, real rocking car back then. And so he told me to throw my keys in the car and lock the car up. And he put me in the back of the cop car with my friend. And they took me over to some substation up there. I don't even remember where it was. I actually did find it about 3 years ago, but I don't remember where he took me at the time. And so I threw up in the back of his cop car, like a good alcoholic would. I was crying, you know, by then I was crying. I don't know, you know, I've had some very different encounters with the police throughout my drinking career, and this was just my experience. And for some reason, he wouldn't allow me to call my folks to come get me. He had to have my friend call her family to come get us. I don't know why, but I was, you know, sobbing in my little clutch purse, and he said, "Open your purse." And I opened my purse, and he goes, "I'm giving you a $35 running a stop sign ticket because I feel sorry for you." And he let me go. So 6 months later, so I had had my license for a whole 6 months, and I was driving down Laguna Canyon Road in my dad's 911S Porsche, very intoxicated. Again, because every time I drank, I wanted to get in a car and drive somewhere. I don't know where I wanted to drive, but I wanted to get there. And so, you know, my dad's Porsche would get me there fast, you know. And so I was driving in Laguna Canyon Road, and that was way before the toll road was there and everything like that. And they had this little ravine, and, you know, the world was really against me and really bad, and I was going to drive it off the canyon and into the ravine, and, you know, and instead I got into a car accident at the Laguna Canyon Road in El Toro, and they were always have really bad accidents at that light, and this car ran the light and hit me instead, and so it wasn't my fault, even though I was really, really drunk again, and I didn't have anybody with me that time, thank goodness, because the car had hit me. My dad didn't put any seatbelts because they weren't required at the time in that car. So the car hit me through the passenger's door all the way to the stick shift and then stopped right there. And the only thing that happened to me, I had a big lump on my head from hitting the steering wheel, and I bit down on my tongue, and it almost came off. I almost had to sew it back on. And so I was bleeding from the mouth, and they asked if I had been drinking, and it was like in the middle of the day, so of course I said no, and they didn't test me or anything, and they said, why are you talking funny? And then they saw that my tongue was almost, you know, hanging off, and so they didn't, you know, inquire, they didn't blood test me, they didn't do anything, they just took me to emergency, and my dad came, and he's like, oh, thank goodness you're all right. You know, I thought I was going to be dead because that car was totaled, of course. And he had had that car longer than he had had me. And I was okay. And I got into, my story is, like many of your stories, is when I drank, I always got in trouble. I always got in trouble of some kind, and most of that was because every time I drank, I wanted to drive. And so my friends, I would show up at parties, they would always want to drive me, and I'm like, no, I'll meet you there, you know, so I could get away and drive somewhere else. You know? And so when I would go to different parties, they would say, you know, okay, if you're going to be drinking, hand over your keys. And so I'd say, okay. And I'd have an extra set on me, and so the next time that I got in trouble was when I was 20, and I was celebrating a friend of mine's 21st birthday, and the party was starting at 11 a.m. So, like a good alcoholic, you know, you drink all those drinks before you get to the party, and that's what I had done. Left the party at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. By then, I was driving a huge station wagon that probably saved my life. And I left that party at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon and came out of a blackout at 8 p.m. driving down Stonehill in Dana Point. And when I came out of that blackout, I felt that the brakes had gone out on the car. So I turned the car into that mobile station on the corner there, Del Obispo, and some poor guy. I'm waiting for him, you know, at some meeting I'm going to run into him, you know, like, that was me. He was pumping gas at the gas station, and I threw his van up against the gas station, and so he was pounding on my window, get out of the car, we're calling the cops right now. I said, okay, you know, here we go again. And so as soon as he got on the phone, I ran back in the car to try to get away, you know. And next is the cop tapping on my window, get out of the car, you know, I'm taking you. I mean, just by then it was just like, I'm taking you straight to Orange County Jail, which he did. And again, I don't know why I had this experience, but this is what happened. That police officer ended up putting me in the front seat, not in the back seat. He put the cuffs on me in front of me instead of behind me. And so at that particular time, I was a big fan of the Bionic Woman, and I had memorized pretty much every episode. And so what I envisioned as we were driving up to Orange County Jail was I was going to get out of those handcuffs. I was going to jump out of that vehicle. I was going to roll across the freeway, and I was going to run up the embankment and get away. And I did get pretty far, but not far enough. I got out of those cuffs, and again, you know, they have handles in the front, but they don't have them in the back. So I had my hand on the handle when the cop said, what are you doing? And he pulled over the side of the road, and he goes, were you going to jump out of the car? And it's like, yeah, like, that's a crazy thought. I don't think so. I'm going to get away, you know. So needless to say, he put me in the back. And I am so, so grateful for that experience, because it led me to you. I got a court card that introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. That was in 1985. And I took my little court card and I went to a, I don't even know how I found this meeting, but I found a meeting by my house, a Mission Viejo, Mission Viejo Missionaries meeting on Wednesday night at 8:30. I still attend that meeting to this day. And I went in there and there was this really, really mean secretary that said, I will not sign your court cards till after this meeting is over. And I wasn't smart enough to sign my own court card. It, you know, like, didn't even give that a thought. You know, I was like, sign your own court card. Who's going to do that, you know? So I would go to those meetings. I went till they told me, you know. And I never introduced myself as a newcomer. I never got anybody's number. I thought I had a problem with drinking, but most of my problems were based on my driving, not, you know, whatever. And so I hadn't really, I saw myself more as like a problem drinker, not necessarily an alcoholic. Because at that time, I didn't really know what an alcoholic was. I hadn't read the book. I had no desire to read the book. I had no desire to get a sponsor. I wanted my life, because my life was so bad, I wanted my life to get better. But it didn't cross my mind like, oh, if you stop drinking, maybe your life will get better at that particular time. So, you know, I did what they told me. I didn't drive because the court told me. I did not drive, you know, on a suspended license. I'd take the bus and I'd get rides and stuff from friends, not anybody in AA, but definitely from other people that I knew. But what that did for me was it introduced me to you. And when I was sick and tired of living the life that I was living, I came back to that particular meeting. And my experience is this, is that it was a Thursday night. I was 24 years old. I worked at a job that we used to actually get to drink on the job. And, you know, as long as we were doing our job, we could drink. That was not a problem. I worked at a furniture factory, and all the factory guys and I would go afterwards and, you know, drink beer. Then I started drinking beer, you know. We'd drink beer together, and we'd show up the next day and drink on the job and drink after work. But I just got sick and tired of living that life. And on a Thursday night, I was wanted so badly to just, I was just tired. I was just 24 years old, just tired. And I showed up to this church Bible study that I was going to, and the pastor at the church at the end of his little Bible studies, you know, stood up and in this real powerful voice and says, "I believe God wants to deliver people from drugs." And I was sitting there and I'm like, "Oh, thank God that's not me," you know. And then he, like, took this long pause. It was like, I mean, it felt like a very long pause. I'm sure it was like half a second. And he goes, "And or alcohol." And I swear to you, it just felt like somebody called my number. And he said, you know, "Come over here. We're going to pray for you." And trust me, if there had been so many times I had tried other ways besides Alcoholics Anonymous to get sober, for sure. And prayer was definitely one of those. And I would go anywhere to get prayer to relieve me of my alcoholism. And this night in particular, I said that magical prayer, you know, "God, please help me." It was a different prayer than I had ever said before, because all my prayers before then, I was still playing God, and I was still telling God what he needed to do for me, which was take this from me. and I wasn't willing to surrender it. And so they told us to go over on this side area, and that these people were going to pray for us. And I knew a lot of people in the church, so I knew the people that needed to pray for me. So I was trying to move my way over to those people, and I kept on getting pushed over to this other side. And they told me to stand in front of this guy that I had never seen before, and for sure I wasn't going to do that because I knew his prayer wasn't going to work, you know. And so I stood in front of him, and he said this prayer to me. He goes, "From this day forward, you're never going to drink again." And I go, "And?" Like, okay, I get that part. More prayer, please, you know. And that was it. That was what he said. But I was so beaten down that I surrendered. And it was the first time I had ever surrendered. And so the very next day, and what I know today is that was just the day. Like, had I to do over with, the guy that I was seeing at my work at the time's birthday was the next day. I would have gotten sober on November the 11th. Because what happened the next morning was I went to work. It was a Friday. Okay, so who gets sober on a Thursday, right? Went to work. It was a Friday. We went for his birthday at lunch to Sophie Sullivan's in Fountain Valley. And here we were going to get ready to, you know, start drinking all over again. There's about 20 of us, and they're all like, "Hey, start with Mary. She'll get the party started." And they turned to me and they said, "What are you going to drink?" You know, and my typical drink for lunch was either shots or Long Island iced tea. And sometimes that would be my lunch. You know, they would have just a Long Island iced tea for lunch. And I said, "I'll have a Coke." And I swear to you, I don't know where that came from. And they said to me, "Are you feeling okay? You know, are you hungover? You know, we just had a couple of beers last night, you know." And I swear to you, I don't know where that came from. And but I definitely guard my sobriety, because I like my sober date, November 9th, 1989. And I have no desire, none whatsoever, to get sober ever again. And keeping sober is the most important thing today for me, one day at a time. And I started going to their little church quasi thing, which, you know, thank goodness they had that. But what started happening was I was staying sober, and I kept on going to that, and I wasn't ready to come to AA at that particular time. And these people weren't staying sober. And so I didn't know what to do. And all of a sudden, I remembered you guys. But this is what I remembered of you guys. That you were a bunch of old men in trench coats. Everybody else remembers you guys, you know. Bunch of old men in trench coats smoking and swearing, saying the Lord's name in vain. You know, I didn't want anything to do with it. And something inside me said, "Go to AA, go to AA." And I'm like, "Go to AA? Why would I ever want to do that?" You know, like, I'm going to go to AA. But I remember that Wednesday night meeting. And so I went there. And I started hanging around a bunch of young people back then, young people that were just, there was no Starbucks, there was no cell phones, there was none of the stuff that we have today. And we used to have to go all the way up to Newport Beach to the Rock and Java up there for coffee and hang out and smoke cigarettes in the meetings, and we would just hang out. And that's what I did for a very long time. I did get a sponsor, and I did work the steps, but it took a little while for me. And And the life that I live today is very different from when I first came in here. But what I listened to were the simple phrases, you know, like they have, easy does it, you know, keep it simple. I listened to this too shall pass. I hated that one because it always was right. You know, it still works today for me, you know. When I have a feeling, I know it will pass because I've had a lot of feelings throughout my sobriety and they all passed. And I didn't have to drink over any one of those feelings. And so I just, you know, I listened to the stupid things that they said, you know, the first drink gets you drunk. I didn't get that for the longest time. I'm like, the first drink gets you drunk? What kind of lightweights am I hanging out with, you know? It's like, no, it takes about 10 drinks to get me drunk, you know. But I didn't have to drink. And I a lot of times just took your experience, strength, and hope, and would hear what the old-timers, you know, they would say, just sit down and shut up and listen, and I would do that. And I'd get a commitment, and I thought, like, you couldn't break that commitment, so I did it. And I stayed sober for 6 months. And then I'd get another commitment, stay sober for another 6 months, you know. And that kept me sober. And, you know, the experiences that I've had sober are like the experiences that I've wanted all my life. When I was out there and I was drinking, I didn't just have problems with drinking and driving. I ended up getting pregnant a couple of times, and I gave both of those children up for adoption. I had two boys, one at 16 and one when I was 22. And so I drank over that for a long time. And today I have reunited with both of those boys, and I have a wonderful relationship as a result of staying sober. And how that happened was I was about 4 years sober, and I was going to my regular morning meeting, the Do It Sober meeting, and somebody shared my story. It was a woman, and she had given up a daughter for adoption, and she had reunited with her daughter, and she attended her daughter's wedding, and she sat with the family. And I said to myself, I want to be like that woman. And I knew I could only do that if I stayed sober. I never wanted my boys to find me in some alley, some gutter, drunk. And it's been a long road, obviously, but a day at a time, you know, no matter what. I lost my father. Well, he died. I didn't lose him. He died in 2001, and he loved Alcoholics Anonymous. He was so thankful that I had gotten sober, and he was so proud. I mean, that was like, he was so proud I didn't drink. And when he died, there was a lot of people in the program that were worried that I might drink. And the feelings were pretty intense. But that the end of that year, he died in April, and at the end of the year, I reunited with my son that same year. And my son never got to meet my father. But as a result of me not drinking, I met my son. And then a couple years ago, I met my, and that was my youngest son. And so a couple years ago, I met my oldest boy, and he lives in Tennessee. He just turned 30, and I have a relationship with him today, and he's married, and he has a son of his own. And, you know, the experiences that I've had in AA, by the way our triangle says, you know, the base is our recovery, and then the side is our unity. And you know, if you're doing Alcoholics Anonymous alone, I heard or read somewhere, you're not doing Alcoholics Anonymous then, because this is definitely a we program. And it says so in the steps. It doesn't say I, it says we. And I don't have to do anything alone. And I'm so grateful for that today, because I really felt like I was all alone. I'll never forget that feeling at 5 years old. I was the only one. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I read the book and I heard the stories, you know, I knew I was home. And I'm so grateful, because I believe everything that it says in that book today about me. You know, I did finally realize what an alcoholic was. You know, I suffer from a disease that tells me I don't have a disease. The biggest thing that I have to remember today is once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Because it's been a little while now since I've had a drink, and I did get sober rather young, and I've heard people say, you know, oh, maybe it wasn't that bad, or maybe I'll try it again, and I'll do, you know, chapter 3 again. And, you know, if I'm controlling my drinking, I'm not enjoying it. And if I'm enjoying my drinking, I'm totally out of control. And the way that I get to live today is I get to be here. And I get to be an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, participating in my own sobriety. And I have a primary purpose today. And that's the greatest thing that I have. And that's the greatest thing that you've given me. Because I was like, you know, what's the point? Why am I here? What's the use? Who cares? And as a result of being sober, you know, I have a message that I can carry. And that keeps me sober a day at a time. And so I'm really, really grateful for that. I'm also grateful that, you know, we have service that's available to us. And I get to participate in that today. Early on, you know, I never wanted even anything to do with, you know, what Steve was talking about, that intergroup place or GSR or anything like that. And, you know, today I get to participate in those. I'm on two different boards for both of those services. And, you know, being of service today is an honor to be able to give back. And it does keep me sober a day at a time. And my mom passed away in 2005. And I would show up after my mom passed away to the morning meeting, and I would just cry. And they'd clap after I was done sharing, you know. And I would just like go, when is this feeling going to end? And my sponsor said, oh, in about 2 years, you know, you'll stop, you know, not feeling this way. And, you know, that was hope. That was hope, because I'm capable of going through a feeling a day at a time, knowing this too shall pass. And it actually did. And I can share about it today and not get all choked up. And it's been 7 years since my mom passed now. And definitely those, I miss her terribly, but those feelings did pass, and I'm so thankful that I didn't have to drink over them. And this past year, you know, there's been some difficult times. I had some health issues, and I didn't have to walk through any of those alone. And I just encourage the newcomers to keep coming back and to just share with people what you're going through, and grab other people's numbers, and don't leave before the miracle happens. That's definitely, I definitely share. And what my experience has been is that the miracles keep happening for me. So this is the place for me. I hope that you stay one day at a time. Again, happy birthday to the birthday people, and thank you for letting me share.